If you're looking to save some money on your wireless plan, take a look at Visible Wireless. They're a transparent wireless carrier with nothing to hide. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, where you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. One line wireless, just $25 a month with taxes and fees included. That's unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Switch now at Visible.com. You shouldn't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. Like Visible, the wireless company making wireless visible.
Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Welcome to our special Unlocked Year in Review episode. We're going to talk about the entire 2017 for Xbox, the hardware, the software, everything that happened in calendar year 2017. I'm Ryan McCaffrey, and I want to introduce the panel. You know Destin Legarry. We've got the great Brandon Tyrell off the Unlocked bench, the very deep Unlocked bench, and Marty Sliva.
Hello.
Over on the far side.
We did it. We completed the year, and none of us died.
I watched you pet a dog today, and you're still here.
Still a few days
I did, and I broke out in hives, but it was great because Peppers is
worth it.
Worth it. Worth it.
I felt bad when Daisy was here semi-recently, and I was sitting with her right behind you in a meeting.
Oh yeah,
you looked physically.
that's just my brand.
All right, guys. So 2017 has come to a close. It's been a very interesting year for Microsoft because it's some big stuff on the hardware side, some. I don't know if controversial stuff on the software side is the right way to put it, but they've had a very unique year. So I thought maybe chronologically would be kind of the best way to look back at everything. And we'll just start there. So as usual, Microsoft was pretty quiet on the software side in the first half of the year. You know, that looks to change in 2018. We're going to talk more about that at the end. When we look ahead to 2018. But yeah, you know, historically, this generation, they haven't really put out a lot of major stuff in Q1. But we did get Halo Wars 2 in February, which...
we all like that game.
Yeah. Destin, I want to... Because a lot of people probably go, wait a second. Oh, yeah. give us a refresher on... You know, what you thought of Halo Wars 2 and...
Yeah, so Halo Wars 2 is like, you know, the sequel to the fan-favorite RTS from Ensemble Studios.
2009, if memory
back in the
correctly.
Day.
Yes.
Back in the day, yeah. And, yeah, you just kind of control your troops, mess around. I don't remember I don't remember too much of the plot, but, like, that you were rewarded with these fantastic cinematics.
Yeah, the Blur Studio.
Yeah, Blur Studio cinematics. And it was a fun game. Yeah.
I spent a bunch of – I finished it. I didn't review it. But, yeah, it didn't quite capture the sort of, I guess, new spirit that the first one had.
Yeah.
Even though the irony was Halo started as an RTS. So to call it new spirit is a little sort of disingenuous in a way.
I think the reason so many people gloss over it and then even like when this was on the list, I was like, oh, I forgot this came out this year, was because Q1 was such a historically incredible quarter for games. just when you look at people's game of the year stuff, a lot of them are coming from that quarter.
Both multi-platform and other, and Sony and Nintendo as well.
You had Resident Evil, but then you also had, you know, Horizon and Zelda. So it was just an incredible just overall start to the year. So that's why I feel like Halo Wars, it's one of those things where in 2017 good games got overshadowed by phenomenal games.
That's true.
Which kind of sucks.
And I guess to clarify, too, we're not going to talk about really a lot of multi-platform stuff on this because it's the Xbox year in review. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the multi-platform stuff is just gaming in 2017, not Xbox specific necessarily. But yeah, it's interesting, Marty, you know, you bring up it's the Neos, the Personas, the Zeldas, the Horizons of Q1. But
it's unique that just this year, like, being great just wasn't good enough, you know?
Yeah. But you still had, you know, it's not like you had nothing to play if you were an Xbox gamer. For Honor was big.
God, that was this year?
Yeah. You reviewed it. You've covered that game. You've played a ton of that game.
Yeah. I mean, it's still going strong. But again, like, it is a great fighting game when you get into the minutiae of it, bogged down by some networking stuff and some griefing and whatnot, balance stuff. But when you look at it, like, that's the fighting game I always wanted as a kid. Like, being able to actually size up, go one-to-one with people. But again, like, it was going up against Zelda and Horizon, and it just wasn't enough. But hopefully, you know, like, when we get into this slow period now, people start going back and playing some stuff that they didn't get yet.
Also, I doubt it's coming through on mic, but I'm like grinning right now because your leather jacket squeaking. It sounds like you're in the bat suit. Like,
should we take this bad boy off? Here we go.
Whatever you want.
Here we go. He's, for everyone at home.
For our audio listeners, he's taking off his cowl. The cape's coming off.
All right.
His voice is suddenly unmodulated. It just,
Was that ASMR?
It's fine now.
We did it.
But then, Ghost Recon Wildlands was the top selling game of the year for a while. That was plenty popular on Xbox.
The Predator.
Halo Wars 2, what was really notable about Halo Wars 2, besides, you know, is a good game, as Marty said, you just got overshadowed by a lot of the great games. Mm-hmm. But what's great about Halo Wars 2 to me is that it came out at all.
Yeah.
Because this is, you know, Halo Wars 1 didn't set the world on fire. It did well. I remember the original did clear a million copies for sure back in the day, but the backstory of the development is, as a lot of you guys I'm sure will remember, and maybe a lot of our listeners will hopefully remember as well, is the developer Ensemble, who was an historic real-time strategy game developer.
Yeah.
Age of Empires, one of the greatest real-time strategy series that gaming has ever seen. They were acquired by Microsoft, and they were the ones that developed Halo Wars originally. So you had this just all-time great RTS developer making an RTS specifically for Xbox, and Halo Wars turned out great. The control scheme was excellent, and it worked. And so, but they were, I mean, this was so crazy. They were shut down, or they were told that they would be shut down before Halo Wars 1 shipped.
Yeah.
Which,
but they cared about it enough to finish it.
Yes, so, they really did. I actually, back when I worked at OXM, right, one of the developers, I believe it might have been, I wish I couldn't remember his name now. It's escaping me, but
Ryan
had him in for an interview.
His name was Ryan. No, I don't know.
That's me. Okay. That's me, Destin. I know the holidays are here. Try to hold it together for one more show, buddy. But yeah, they really were. They had the professional pride to see that through instead of just being like, well, we're out of jobs anyway, so screw it. We're going to ship buggy garbage.
Yeah.
Like, no, it was a great game. And yeah, the fact that it's been, I guess, 8 years between Halo Wars 1 and Halo Wars 2, and this was now picked up by
Creative, right?
Assembly. Creative Assembly. Mm-hmm. There's too many. Who's the other one that I always
Affinity.
Thank
Affinity.
You, yes.
California, also abbreviated as CA.
Yeah. But yes, Creative Assembly did an excellent job picking up the torch.
Yeah, the thing about Halo Wars that, I mean, I played it when it first came out. And Destin and I actually did a lot of preview coverage on this together. And I think you and I went to a couple events for it too. So we played a lot of it coming out ahead of launch.
And we were worried. I remember being worried before launch.
I wasn't 100% convinced on it. But the one thing they did get right, that it was kind of obvious right from the get-go, is Halo Wars found a way to make RTSs work on a controller that I had never experienced before.
Mm-hmm. And really has not really been done since.
It's still like the best translation of the, you know, precision of a mouse and a keyboard onto a controller. Mm-hmm. And they brought that over this time as well. So it really is like the best feeling version of it. Because there's some real crap out there when it comes to RTSs on consoles. Yeah. I don't know if you remember the original Xbox era AVP RTS that came out on consoles.
No one wants that.
Yeah,
I remember after Halo Wars came out on the 360, that sort of spurred a few more that came out, and I played a few of them. I actually finished Lord of the Rings Battle for Middle-earth 2, which was very good, but didn't run so great on 360, and the control scheme was not nearly as good as Halo Wars is. And then Supreme Commander 2, tried a bit of that, and it was like each shoulder button and trigger would activate like another sub-layer of controls, and it was just this like multi-layered, kind of a mess.
It's that point where you have to like remember, have muscle memory, like where you're going, you know?
Yeah.
All right, I need to move right. L1, X, R2. Yeah. Okay, we got it.
And yeah, so Halo Wars 2 came out, excellent game. And as a sort of a bookend to that, as it was the first big Xbox release of 2017, it got enhanced with a pretty cool expansion pack around the time the Xbox One X came out. And it runs really well on the X and looks great. And also, to their credit, that it's on PC as well. You can if you're just a PC, if you're like a RTS diehard who could never be bothered to to pick up an RTS with a gamepad, well, it's there for you on PC as well.
Yeah, and despite what I said about it being on the console, I've played it on both, and I still think PC is the obvious way to play that game if you have the opportunity to do
it.
You know, but it runs great on the console, looks fine. So
elsewhere in Q1, the other big success for Microsoft was the Xbox One S.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It had come out in the summer of 2016. And continued to sell very, very well. Now
it's like $200. It's really reasonable, right?
Yeah.
At least here over the holidays. Yeah, I don't know what the final, if it's going back to a regular price, but I'm sure it's, we're heading into, year five? So it's got to be hitting lower prices on a permanent basis.
Internally, the guts are basically the same, a little bit better, but it's big. Thing is that it does 4K video.
Well, it's so much smaller.
Mm-hmm.
Internal power supply.
Yeah.
Aesthetics also.
It's whisper quiet, which the original also was.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a great box, great design. Microsoft really hit it out of the park, and gamers responded. It sold very, very well in the early parts of this year.
How big the launch Xbox was until literally over the weekend. I'm moving rooms and I found my launch Xbox. I'm like, oh my god, you're such a monstrosity.
Yeah,
you it's large heavy too. VHS player.
And I know you're not criticizing.
Oh no,
you're complimenting the S right now.
Yeah.
Like, that's how
the
good
S and the X. Like, they just are phenomenal, just from an aesthetic standpoint.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Swapping out my day one Xbox One for the X was kind of like awesome.
I had the
so
exact
much
same
more
feeling.
Yeah. It looks so good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, good
Scorpio Edition represent.
All right, so really, again, not a lot in Xbox land from a first party perspective.
The year did kick off with the Scalebound cancellation.
I was wondering.
Was I think I blocked that out. I didn't even have it in my notes.
I think that was January. So that was like, not only was that just like a really crappy thing for Xbox, but just for anyone looking forward to a Platinum game. And it's just being like, oh no, like. I feel like we came back from Christmas break, and then all of a sudden it was like, all right, we're ready to start the year.
Yeah.
And then it was like, oh, that's
like,
not great.
If you had been waiting 2 years for Scalebound and then it got canceled, then you waited a year for the announcement of Bayonetta 3, and now you're going to wait another year before you can even play it.
Yeah, good memory, Marty. January 9th.
Yeah. I remember that was one of the biggest, the first big news stories of the year.
Yeah. I hope that's afforded Microsoft more opportunities to create other exclusives or whatever their reason was for canceling it.
Yeah.
I just hope we get other cool games, because that was like in their lineup, and it was a bummer to lose that as a console exclusive.
Yeah. It was, unless, I mean, as Microsoft said, like, what if that game was going to turn out to be
bad,
a sixth Destiny? Mm-hmm. Are you still sad that it got? I mean, it's we don't want to see people lose jobs or anything like that, but from a gamer's perspective, if it was going to be a six, is it really?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why they canceled it, you know, so like, I mean, you could guess that it was going to be a disaster.
There were a lot of rumors about, you know, what was it, you know, was it costing too much money or taking too, who knows? Yeah, we never got the real story. Yeah.
Regardless, I just hope
it's
something
try or get us that tell all
comes out of it.
He would be the guy. Yeah. He would be the person. All right. So then, like I said, it's pretty quiet on the sort of Xbox exclusive first party front until E3. And I thought Xbox had. I thought they had their best E3 maybe yet of this generation. I thought it was a wonderful E3 this year. Let's go through some of it. So Project Scorpio, which had been very clearly teased as the capper to their E3 2016 press conference, they kicked it off by unveiling it as the Xbox One X.
Mm-hmm.
The name didn't leak.
No.
I feel like a lot of people, like,
there were guesses.
Even Keeley tweeted out, this is what the name of the thing is, and it was wrong, like, right before the conference. So, yeah.
Oh, that's right.
It was something.
I wonder if Microsoft just purposely puts out red herrings.
Yeah.
Because
they did
that, or we think they did that with the Xbox One.
Yeah.
I wonder if he checked with Microsoft first. They're like, yeah, do whatever you want. And then he was wrong.
Yeah.
Well, for in any case, the X became the official name of the product. And the specs were touted again. A lot of the games were shown running on the X during their E3 presentation. And then towards the end, they snuck in the $4.99. But that, you know, over time, we'll sort of talk more about this when we're talking about Q3 next. You know, at the time, some people, myself included, were like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. $4.99 is going to be like, is it going to be $100 better than the alternative? I think in time it very much proved that that worth. But so the X, $4.99, and we saw a ton of games. So we saw and played a new demo of Sea of Thieves, which we've devoted so much airtime to. And for as far as I'm concerned, I can't devote enough airtime to how much I love that game.
The E3 Sea of Thieves demo sold me on the game. Because we had played it the year before, and then you and I played it this year.
Yes, year.
It's all bleeding together. You and I played it this year, and I remember we just could not stop smiling during the whole thing.
And just their E3 presentation, the stage demo alone, was this really wonderfully narrated tour of the game and sort of some of the features, which was done very, you know, sort of in character, in the spirit of the game, while still very much educating you about the game.
Yeah, and showcase more systems and mechanics and stuff like the underworld or like that the place you go when you die in the game, hinting at some mythical sea beasts.
Spooky. Yeah, we're watching some. I'm sure this is
that map footage.
Gameplay.
Thank you. Oh, that map looks so good.
Thanks.
All right, sorry, put it in.
Settle down.
And the thing, I know we harp on it all the time, and every time we talk about Sea of Thieves, it's that phrase, you can't really know what it's about or know how fun it is until you get your hands on it. And I know it sucks to like hear that, but honestly, like when I'm standing on the bow of the ship looking out and you're like, no, you have to turn right now. Or I told you, you have to turn
hard
left.
Hard to starboard
or you're going to hit a rock. Yeah. It's like moments like that where you literally just go turn that really sell that game for me. And I honestly can't wait to put the crew together at IGN. Like I'm sure there are going to be multiple crews and we'll all take each other down.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll be starting a group for it. We'll start a whole unlocked thing. So right. That
an armada, if you will.
Yes.
Nautical term.
I think that's a nautical term.
So Sea of Thieves looked great. Crackdown 3, one of the more, definitely, I think it's fair to call a mixed reception.
Yeah.
Terry Crews is cool.
Terry Crews, he's always cool.
Yeah. I was sad when
that guy
canceled.
Wakes up cool.
Yeah. He's great. Yeah.
Delayed, not canceled. I was sad when it was delayed. I got to play it at E3. It was fun. It was. It felt like Crackdown 1.
Which is good.
Yeah, which is
not like Crackdown 2. It felt like Crackdown 1.
Yeah, it did.
The flip side of that is it also kind of looked like Crackdown 1.
Yeah, so I'm hoping that this additional time allows them to refine and improve.
Yeah.
You know, I'm trying to be a little bit more positive about like why these things are happening.
Of course, and there's always a reason.
Yeah. So like, you know, I was talking to those guys. They're really excited about Crackdown. They're happy to be working on it again.
Yeah.
So I just, I hope they make a better game and I'll still play it when it comes out regardless.
Yeah.
I like Crackdown a lot.
From what we saw, I'm totally down to give them the benefit of the doubt, but let's see what it looks like next year.
Even if it's Crackdown 1, I still love putting a bunch of cars together and blowing them up. Like they have the black hole gun or something now. Like you shoot, it sucks everything in, then boom.
Yeah.
I think really fun.
I think Crackdown 3 was definitely, like a lot of games this generation, a victim of being revealed too early with promises a little too grand.
Which we've seen Phil Spencer respond directly to by publicly saying, hey, we don't want to go out there and announce games too early when they, we want to show them closer to when they're ready to go.
I think everyone sort of realizes that you get a pushback from fans. Like fans, well, of course, everyone wants to know what's on the horizon, but if the horizon is 3 years away, you can pump the brakes a little bit.
I do also think that Crackdown has suffered a bit as far as public perception, which isn't even Microsoft's fault per se, or even certainly not the game's fault, but the fact that it was pegged to release on the same day as the Xbox One X, it was never touted as this is the showcase title for this for the Xbox One X. Not once that I can possibly recall.
But
by
I think
virtue of
association.
I mean, it is fair to kind of make that association a bit, and I don't think that did the game any favors, particularly after it visually was not all there yet at E3.
We'll talk about it a little bit more later, but I think a lot of people associate PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds with the X launch. Like, that was the first game that a lot of gamers were looking forward to get on that console.
Yeah, it was so, just such a weird with PUBG and Crackdown, those are such... They're so at odds with the mission statement of the X.
Yeah.
The most powerful console ever.
Yeah, because like you see that in like when they, you know, Microsoft had Assassin's Creed Origins on stage and they showed Metro, and these are games where I'm like, oh my God, these look like, like this is like pushing this console, this generation to the limit.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so to then pair it with Crackdown and PUBG, you're like, well, these aren't doing what those games are doing.
Yeah.
You know, regardless of gameplay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gameplay to me is king, but just visually they're not doing the same
thing. So Crackdown delayed, which we'll talk more about. Well, I guess we're talking about it now. It was Q3. I guess if I recall, it was shortly before Gamescom, I think, or right at before. It was right before Gamescom.
Right. Yeah.
They delayed that. But strong E3 continued. Beautiful introduction to a sequel we all wanted, Ori and the Will of the Wisps, complete with a pianist who came out and played a beautiful score that I'm sure we'll be hearing in the game. I feel like not enough people are talking about this game yet.
Yeah.
I mean, there hasn't. Well, we haven't seen it.
Yeah, it's just been that one drop.
If you're watching the video version, you're seeing it on screen now. But my goodness, I love Ori so much. You make it past that water tower and you are good to go. That's the moment of truth right there. But Ori, I feel like it was a hit. It did well for the Xbox One at a time early in the life cycle when it sort of needed an original hit. I really hope that a lot more eyes are going to be on it when Will of the Wisps comes out.
Yeah, I mean, with the reception from the first one, I this, you know, Ori is now going to be a Microsoft franchise that people are excited about.
I love the art style that we've seen in a lot of Xbox games lately.
So
we got
gorgeous.
Cuphead, you know, the original Ori, of course. There's one I'm blanking on, but I mean, it's just look
Sea
at
of Thieves'
it
awesome. Art style is beautiful as well.
They're not afraid to like try something new, and this looks absolutely stunning.
Yeah, this is Moon Studios, the developers of the first game. Fun fact, I don't know if this is still true, but this was true for the first game. They are a decentralized development.
They don't have an office.
They don't have an office. They all work separately from around the world.
They have a 24-hour dev cycle, just like Ubisoft, but with one millionth of the people.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That trailer is my application to let IGN let me work from home.
look what they can do. Look what they can do. So,
imagine
Ori,
how much work I get done.
We just have to put a monitor right there.
Ori and the Will of the Wisps was definitely one of the highlights of Microsoft's E3 conference.
Have they said 2018?
I thought it said...
Or is it just an assumption?
Boy, now you're making me look like a real bad host.
Oh, no. I'm just trying to remember because, like... You know, we'll talk about the other games, but Sea of Thieves obviously is 2018, and then State of Decay. But I can't recall if they straight up said 2018.
Don't remember.
I'd be willing to bet that it comes out by next fall.
Yeah.
I'm showing TBA, so maybe I'm assuming it's 2018.
No, I think that's a very safe assumption.
Mm-hmm. We're gonna go with that. Mm-hmm. But also, Forza Motorsport 7 was probably I think that was the first Xbox One X game shown after. They officially revealed the console at the beginning of the press briefing. This was to be expected, and it's
what can you say?
It's the best looking car game that's ever been made.
I love playing that game and smashing into Per Schneider every chance I get. I always try and spin his car out.
His drivatar. Yeah,
I do clips and then I tweet at him. Like,
you know, he can fire you. Hey, you can work from home personally without a paycheck and not for IGN.
No.
Real decentralized now. The crazy thing about the Forza footage, if you're watching the video version, you can see it now, is
no matter what you've seen from Forza on the internet, whether it be YouTube or whatever, it doesn't look as good as it looks on an HDR
on a 4K HDR television.
During the review, I was playing Forza and I was like, wow, this is stunning.
The review of the console.
Luke
Riley, our ace driving
our
game
ace
guy,
driving
did,
reviewer.
Did the game review. You did the console review.
Yeah. So when I was reviewing the One X, I was using Forza as one of the test games and I was like, wow, this is just stunning. And then I went home for the weekend and came back and found out that the 4K HDR patch had been deployed over the weekend. And I downloaded it and I was like, oh, this is stunning.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and of course, as usual, Forza Motorsport 7 has the gameplay to match those visuals. And then when the game came out in the very beginning of October, it had at least what I perceived to be the problem that Forza always has, which is it's too damn good. Everyone just expects that it's going to be great. And so you don't see a lot of sort of hype for it in the community. But it comes out, it sells well, it reviews great. Got another 9 from us this year. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, look great at E3. Also, Destin, I think this was your vote for Game of the Show.
Yes. And it should have been everybody's.
This was teased at EA's conference the day prior to Microsoft's E3 press briefing. But then,
lead writer, Drew Karpyshyn, Casey Hudson's back. They got the dream team back in Edmonton, basically. Man, Anthem, I am so excited about. And that demo that they showed at E3, I
Microsoft's
think that blew people away. Any Destiny fans, they're like, I am watching Anthem because it looks like it's finally going to give Destiny the competition that it desperately needs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, the idea of BioWare doing a Destiny-like game, I just feel like it's just made for you.
Yeah. Right? My next addiction. Yeah.
Talk to me more, Destin, about the demo and what impressed you about it.
Yeah, so you start out, you're walking through a town, and you get kind of an idea of what the narrative aspects of the game are going to be like, and then you actually hop into your suit. I can't remember the name of the suits. Does anybody? Javelins?
The Iron Man.
Yeah, basically you hop into your Iron Man suit, then you walk out, and you see this whole world, and he just jumps off and starts flying anywhere he wants to go, he and she. And then at one point, they're just flying, and they go underwater. So, like, there's this whole other area that you're going to get to explore, and you, like, get points for even just going there and, you know, looking at things. And then the combat looks phenomenal. They show the drops, and then they tease what's either a strike-like event or a raid. Man, I'm just so hyped. It was running at 4K. It was checkerboarded, but still looks absolutely phenomenal. And, like, that was a demo running way before release. So it's going to be interesting to see how much better they're able to make it look. Hopefully they make it look better.
Was this your BCD or was this the actual trailer?
This was just the trailer on stage. I don't think anybody from BioWare was there.
I didn't remember there being a behind closed door.
Stage presentation was the only thing.
BioWare guys were there, but they weren't like doing interviews
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just saying obviously we're talking about Microsoft, but EA sort of had a crummy 2017 between Mass Effect.
We talked about that last week.
Yeah, Andromeda was a bummer.
Battlefront's reception, but I feel like Anthem
visceral closing.
Yeah, I feel like Anthem is just clearly a high point for them in the year because everyone left E3 talking like, oh, well, that's the game I want to see more of in 2018.
And all the comments I see on the Star Wars stuff is like, good thing this happened before Anthem because they can learn how to like do their loot box strategy if they're going to make it be an Anthem in a better way that's better for the consumer.
That's 100%. Like if this is targeting Destiny as the competition to it, it is totally a games as a service now moving forward. And that is so much more vital. When I say that, I mean like loot boxes and stuff to keep you constantly going the way the Destiny's tapped into
it. Distant world.
Yeah, that's so much more of a vital component to a games as a service game versus something like Star Wars, which, you know, was just a progression system.
It's so weird. It's just like cosmetic items only. Like, it's not hard. Don't put any game-breaking stuff in your loot boxes.
Like the way Halo does it.
Yeah.
It's Halo 5.
Yeah, the rec packs.
And, it's been doing it.
People are fine with that. And they often do charity drives where, like, if you buy rec packs, it goes to charity. So, like, good comes out of it, too.
Yeah, and you touched on it for a second there, Destin. But, yeah, this is the Mass Effect Trilogy team at BioWare Edmonton. This is not, you know, Andromeda was Montreal, who has since been folded. Yeah, yeah, this is what Casey Hudson drew this up and then left and then they kept working on it.
Yeah.
And then he came back. Now he's the studio head.
Yeah.
And this has been in the works for a long, long time. And this, This is arguably their A-team. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Casey Hudson, actually, on the original Mass Effect, he actually drew some of the characters that ended up being staples. Like, I think he did the original sketch for the Geth, off the top of my head. So, like, one of the main antagonists of the original Mass Effect was created on a napkin by Casey Hudson. So he really, really cares. And, like, just the way that they collaborate based on the internal – the behind-the-scenes stuff that I've watched and all the documentaries for Mass Effect, it's just – I'm really excited that that team is back.
Yeah. And not to be forgotten, the E3 stage show for Microsoft, State of Decay 2, which I know, Brandon, you and I, that's near and dear to our hearts.
That's our anthems.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it didn't get a ton of – I feel like it didn't get a ton of hype during and after the show. But I was really impressed by the game. I not only saw what everybody saw on stage, but I got to see it behind closed doors as well, with Jeff Strain and the team at Undead Labs. And it's doing what it should do as a sequel to a sort of up and coming indie hit game, which is go bigger, go better, go prettier. So you know the original game, it's. The developers themselves acknowledge it's rough around the edges from a technical perspective. It was running on CryEngine, which is not to knock CryEngine, but they have now moved to Unreal Engine 4. They have a much bigger budget. It's a full, you know, AAA budgeted game that's being, you know, funded by Microsoft. It's a first-party exclusive. It is... I think, you know, their dev team is bigger. They know what works from the first game. Mm-hmm. You know, it's giving the 4-player co-op that the original, you know, that they talked about always wanting to do, but as a small startup team couldn't do with the first game. And so I really could not be more excited about this game. And it's really because to me, Brandon, there's nothing else, even 4 years later. Still nothing else like this game. It is secretly a role-playing game
when you
start playing it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that's one of the things that I fell in love with about this team, Undead Labs. And, I mean, Jeff Strain's pitch on it, when I read all the dev docs and all of their...
Dev dogs?
Yeah, dev dogs. When I read all their development documents about like what their vision was for the game, it was like, hey, imagine you're sitting at a bar just having a beer with your friends and you're all deciding like, what would you do in a zombie apocalypse? And this is the game. Mm-hmm. And from that day one, I was just totally sold. And following it through all of its development, it is so much deeper than it looks. It looks like a pretty indie game, but the things that you can do and the amount of like variety and team building and choice and consequence that go in it, you know, like the no easy decision stuff. I was just so blown away.
Yeah.
I've loved it since I first played it. And I cannot wait for State of Decay.
Yeah. And this was one, I don't know if it was ever officially delayed, but this is now,
I don't remember.
You know, it is one of the games that'll be on the 2018 list that we'll talk about.
Yeah, I'm trying to stay in blackout right now, and like just watching the footage for the second time this year.
Getting you psyched.
That scene.
Yeah. And then not to be left out, Marty, this is, I think, a key component of what helped make E3 so great for Microsoft is, I think it's fair to say that the early 2-3 years of this console generation, you know, Sony was so aggressive getting a lot of wonderful indie titles on the PS4, and that they really seemed to kind of have the mind share in that category. But I know you and I have talked about this off air. I really feel like Microsoft has snatched that back. And this E3, highlighted by The Last Night, was a game that I think sort of universally blew all of us away. I don't know if we have the footage for it queued or not, but a lot of the great games that are, by the way, launching on Xbox first, the whole, okay, I mean, console launch exclusive, a bit of a silly thing unto itself, but you will be able to play the likes of The Last Night and a lot of other cool things first on the Xbox.
Yeah. And we even had stuff that came out this year, like Tacoma, which is still just on Xbox and PC. And then, Last Night, Annapurna showed a couple other games, including Ashen, which is sort of like a Dark Souls-y indie game. But Microsoft, it definitely feels like that pendulum swinging back, and they're going back to being the sort of choice makers that they were in the 360 generation with Xbox Live Arcade. And I know we keep saying how we want to bring that sort of branding back, the Summer of Arcade.
I do. I wrote a whole silly thing about it.
No, and I completely agree with you. And then, you know, they've done a good job, especially in the last couple of years. And then with stuff like, we know, Below is coming back. And that was a game featured, like, literally at the first Xbox One E3.
Yeah.
Yep.
But it's like, still, I played it a couple of weeks ago. Like, it is 100% still real. And then, you know, we'll get into Cuphead and everything, which had a long incubation there. But
yeah,
I think it Microsoft is wisely pairing its big AAA, you know, Sea of Thieves, Crackdown, Gears, Halo stuff alongside these, you know, smaller, more niche, but no less impressive games.
I can't wait to try this one out. It reminds me of Out of This World meets Blade Runner.
Exactly. And that's why we all fell in love with it. In fact, one of the most liked videos we've posted this year, at least as far as the like to dislike ratio, we got this cool little exclusive. The Tim Saray and the Odd Tales team made. We can take no credit for it whatsoever other than politely asking them for something new to give to our audience on the game. Yeah, they made a kind of – basically it was a behind the scenes on how they made that trailer that we just saw if you were watching the video version, and sort of – which also weaves in the origins of the game itself. And it is it's like 11 minutes long, but it's totally fascinating, and it's one of the most – I think one of the coolest videos that we got to host.
Yeah, if you like geeking out and sort of looking at how the sausage is made, that's just an excellent look at how that really gorgeous trailer came together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So E3 was fantastic for Microsoft. And then the exclamation point, I can't forget this. Phil comes out and gives us original Xbox backwards compatibility, which may only matter to crusty old grizzled idiots like me, but... man, it made me happy. And here we go. Now here, as we close out the year, I can play Crimson Skies and a
Ninja
bunch
Gaiden.
Of other cool, Ninja Gaiden Black, a bunch of other cool just games that I still have and still love on the Xbox One.
So CJ and Mitch are really good at Ninja Gaiden Black and Ninja Gaiden, and they're actually doing a Let's Play series on IGN right now that you can watch.
That'll be better than the one you and I did.
Yeah,
we did
three episodes, didn't we? Was it three?
We got canceled after three episodes.
That's fair.
They've gotten pretty far. I don't think they've died yet. They're doing pretty well. So
Well, CJ like used to do.
Literally was a borderline.
He was top 100.
Borderline professional.
Yeah.
Top 100.
It's fun
in
to
the
watch.
World. Wow.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's I was kindly invited up by Microsoft to do a profile on the compatibility team, which I got to do in October. I believe it was late September, early October, and it's probably one of the favorite things I've been lucky enough to get to do here at IGN this year. And boy, what a just unbelievably passionate team that really certainly don't personally get credit for doing compatibility. It's something that Nintendo's not doing, Sony's not doing. They are the only ones in the industry, in the console industry, doing this, and it's really a thankless task. Like, it is a pretty, you know, anonymous, underappreciated thing. I think we try to give credit whenever we can, but man, they a wonderful group of people that's making games from 15 years ago work on a console of 2017 that has completely different architecture.
Yeah, it's funny when you mentioned that, you know, of the three first parties, Microsoft is clearly the youngest in terms of the console gaming space. You know, obviously Nintendo is way older and Sony's an entire generation older, but Microsoft's still the one who's sort of cherishing their past the best.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, Nintendo, I can't buy virtual console games on Switch, which is insane.
Which is horrible.
I can't give you money for these games. PlayStation has sort of taken a really scattershot approach, and some things work well, and then other times they release a PS2 game for $20, and like, what are you doing here? But kudos to Microsoft for not only the 360 generation, but now original Xbox. I think that's awesome.
So Q3, again, it's fairly quiet. Crackdown 3 was delayed, which we mentioned a few minutes ago, which I think none of us were mad about. It was just sort of like, well, cool, great. Make it better. Take the time. And it has cost Microsoft in the perception department. Like, it weakened their 2017. There's no doubt about that. But if it makes the game better, then that's just going to make for an awesome 2018.
Yeah,
for them.
Sets it up for next year.
And then the Xbox One X, you know, there were some people like me that were sort of a little skeptical on the value proposition of the X and, you know, would everybody take advantage of it to the degree that the console was capable of, or would people sort of only match it up to whatever the PS4 Pro can do and stop there. And Microsoft did a great job of answering those questions in Q3 as the run-up to Xbox One X's launch came along. They talked about how the console will just automatically boost games no matter what.
Yeah.
But they can't, you know, of course, and then developers can
with added dev support.
Yep.
Yeah, you can get much more out of that same,
yes,
same mile.
And then, of course, it's got the all sorts of proprietary tech in it, and we got wasn't the Digital Foundry thing? No, that was before E3, wasn't it?
Yeah,
the visit up there,
yeah,
complete sort of, yeah, where they sort of went into the guts of the specs, but yeah, I thought they really did a much better job of sort of clarifying the value proposition of the X in Q3, leading up to its launch in Q4 here, which we'll talk about now, and that was certainly the biggest thing that Microsoft had this quarter was I think compared to, you know, not to make it a Sony Microsoft thing, but I think Microsoft really did take a lot of notes from the PS4 Pro's launch from the year prior. And I think it's fair to say, I don't know if you guys would disagree, but I don't think Sony really treated the PS4 Pro's launch like a console launch, whereas I think Microsoft did do that.
Yeah.
With the Xbox One X and to their benefit.
And that was really intentional too, right?
Yeah.
Like, this is the rebranding. This is the coming out party again for Microsoft in this console generation.
Yeah, yeah, and so it was the fact that Microsoft was focused on it, whereas Sony with the Pro was also had sort of their other eye on
VR.
And the fact that those two don't necessarily play incredibly well together in certain things is really muddied, whereas Microsoft just sort of had a unified front all leading towards the X.
Comparatively, Sony's launch just seemed confused, and like the fact that it doesn't have some of the stuff that the X does now, like the Blu-ray player, is just baffling to me. So it's great to see the X come out with Microsoft come out with a fantastic console with the X, and I love playing it at home. It's so easy to just sit down on my couch, and I could play PUBG on my PC, but I could just sit on my couch and be lazy and play it there, or play Assassin's Creed or whatever on my beautiful 4K
television. Probably wait for PUBG on the Xbox. You should probably keep playing the PC for a while.
Gameplay's still pretty good. If you have an OG Xbox, disable DVR.
Well, you brought it up, so let's talk about that. Yeah. That's the last thing.
Sorry.
The last big point for Microsoft. We'll cover a couple of other things here in a minute, but PUBG, sort of, which, by the way, if you are watching this week, if you're watching this prior to January 1st, PUBG is free right now with the purchase of an Xbox One X, which...
And I think that's also for the Scorpio. I think the Scorpio is considered part of the X.
Oh, yeah. I didn't realize
there
were any left.
I don't know for sure. Some Scorpio owners were tweeting at me like, oh, I feel kind of burned. Like, I want PUBG. I think you should check. I think it counts.
What?
Yeah.
No. It's December 17th to the 31st.
If you buy it now, not retroactive.
Oh.
Yeah, no, sorry. Okay.
As of yesterday, it started.
If you purchase an X... between the 17th of December and the 31st of December.
Okay.
You do get you're getting instead of paying $30 for the game preview version of PUBG, you are getting that for free, which I think if that had been the Xbox One S, that would be a risky move on Microsoft's part, bundling an unfinished game that they are clearly this is unfinished. But I think with the X, you're getting the harder core knowledgeable crowd that's going to be more receptive. I mean, but I know what you're going to say.
It's
go ahead.
Weird that the most powerful console ever made, a $500 console, is bundled with a game that even on PC doesn't. The reason people play that game isn't because it looks pretty or because it runs well. It's because of those dynamic stories that we talked about last week. And like, those stories don't need a $500 box to run. So it's just weird to me that you don't, I don't know, pair this with something like Gears, which looks incredible with the 4K patch, or like even
Forza.
Halo 5 or Forza or Cuphead even. Like
Cuphead, we'll talk about that in a minute, has no Xbox One X enhancement.
It doesn't need it.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
It doesn't need it.
You're perfect just the way you are, Cuphead.
Well, when you buy an X, you do get the game preview bundle. You get like a month.
You get
two weeks. Yeah. So you can try out a whole bunch
pass,
of games.
Game Pass.
Yeah. So
which,
you can try like
PUBG
Halo.
Is not a part of.
Yeah.
But you can play Halo. You can play some of the.
Yeah. It's just, I totally get that Microsoft, like, Yeah, I mean, we talked about it ad nauseum last week, but like they're leaning heavily in 2018 on PUBG, so I get that they want it to be in as many people's hands as possible for when the game does stabilize and does get the updates, but it just doesn't seem like it seems the antithesis of the Xbox.
But that, you know, statement. But PUBG was actually should have mentioned it earlier. I mean, that was a big get for them at E3. It was like we're gonna have this as a console exclusive. And now it is here, Destin, and you've been covering it extensively. Mm-hmm. You contributed to our very much review in progress.
Yeah, that's not a final score.
Because the game's not done.
Yeah.
It's an in-progress review of an in-progress
game.
And
just, so listeners have been...
it's important to give impressions and help people decide whether they should spend the $30 and spend it now or later.
Exactly. It's about informing purchasing decisions. It's not about scoring a final product. So right now, yes, PUBG does need a lot of work. And I understand why that can be confusing to a lot of our viewers and readers. But it's just about, hey, here's the state of the game right now. There's a lot of problems with it. But I love seeing people tweet at me and they get it. They get why it's exciting, especially when playing on the X.
Yeah.
If you're playing on an original Xbox and you're having trouble, one of the best tips I've heard is to disable game DVR.
Thank you for mentioning that.
That's been very helpful to a lot of players on that platform. But if you're on the X, it's playable. There's some menu system stuff. It's really chuggy in the beginning. But once it stabilizes, you still get that action experience. This one dude sent me an image of his hand, like literally shaking just from the adrenaline of getting in the top 10. And I'm like, yes, like more gamers get to experience what I've been playing for like a year. And that just makes me so happy.
Well, it's great. I mean, PUBG on PC is what, 100 million? Something
it's
like that?
A lot.
Yeah. A lot of people.
Yeah, are 20, I think.
Yeah, I think it's 20.
Which is a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. There are millions and millions of people playing this game on PC. And for people that don't own a PC that can A, run it, or B, just don't have
game
the opportunity.
On your PC?
Yeah. It's really disappointing to not be able to be part of the 20 million player, social experiment that is PUBG right now.
Yeah.
And this gives it, it already passed a million players on Xbox One X or One.
Right in the first 24 or 48 hours.
Which is crazy. I mean, clearly Microsoft like doubled down on it and it paid off. I know it's got a lot more work to do moving forward. But this gives people who wouldn't otherwise have the chance to play it, the chance to play it. Yeah. And there's nothing wrong. It might not be in a super stable state right now.
I mean, for me, I am waiting.
Yeah.
I've watched you play it a bunch in the office. And while I believe everybody that the experience is super fun, that experience will still be super fun when the rest of the game is done. Mm-hmm. I've got a million other done games that I want to catch up on. So, enjoy it now. And obviously, if you go in there, you know the caveats going in, that it's going to be rough around the edges, that it's not a finished game. But so everybody's going to feel differently about it. There's nothing – nobody's putting a gun to your head, forcing you to spend the $30 to play it. I'm going to hang back, but I love hearing the stories of you guys playing it and having an awesome time.
But for me, I'll just tell everybody, we gave it a 5 right now. But for me, I'm just like, this game is like one great patch from getting those optimization issues addressed from being like a 7 or an 8.
Yeah.
It's just right now, it's just too many problems.
Have they released any information about how updates are going to go between PC and Xbox? Is it going to be like in parity? Or?
I'm not sure, but they're working closely with Microsoft to get it optimized on that platform. And all those people like, when's it coming to PS4? It's not for a long time. They're worried about their first console launch right now. That's what it seems like based on conversations with them. And they're just so happy to be on Xbox. Yeah. A million players on Xbox.
Yeah. I think PUBG and that initial million players overnight really gives Xbox a ton of positive momentum heading into 2018, which again, we'll talk about in a second. But let's first talk about the X. We talked about PUBG, but the game that did launch alongside the Xbox One X, again, it wasn't positioned as an X killer app, but was Super Lucky's Tale. Had the misfortune of coming out, even though on a totally different platform, came out the week after Super Mario Odyssey.
Oh boy,
I do that.
but just on it, unfortunately, this one, and not that it's not full priced. It was the only, the only exclusive games, the only first party exclusives for Xbox in Q4. So that's why this game is worth mentioning. You had Cuphead, you had Forza, and you had Super Lucky's Tale. That's it. And then PUBG, which I think is, we sort of half count because it is in preview. It's not a it's not a final release that's fully feature complete yet. So I reviewed Super Lucky's Tale because I wasn't very interested. I wanted it to be good. I really wanted to like this. I had just come off of Mario. It's the things that I were critical of it for would have still been true, even if I hadn't just come off of Super Mario Odyssey. But I'd love to see another shot at this if the developers were to get another chance to make another Lucky's Tale game for Xbox.
Super Lucky's Tale 64.
I love the art style. I love
Super Duper Lucky's Tale.
You know, even though the character is very sort of Conker-esque, sort of like it's like if Conker and Tails from Sonic had a baby.
Oh, there it is the fanfic coming to you.
DeviantArt.com.
It would be him, but
you've just destroyed your inbox.
Yeah, this unfortunately sort of came and went. And worse, I think its problems are such that they're significant problems for a kid playing the game, because this is a very much an all ages appropriate and kid friendly game, but the camera is a disaster in this game. So you know, I don't want to dwell on the negative. The review's out there, but this was one of Microsoft's first party exclusives for the fall. But the other one, the one that we can again have. So we've spent so much time on, and I could spend a million more shows talking about this, is Cuphead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How astounding is it that Cuphead lived up to 4 years of hype, guys?
Yeah.
I mean, not a lot of games can do that.
Yeah, but I mean, the last time we had a game like that was like The Last Guardian. And then it came out, I was like, oh. After that.
Yeah.
But I mean, Cuphead, honestly, the extra time they took to make the running gun levels into sort
which
of
seeing here now,
so
after watching
just the boss rush,
I
think totally paid off. And those levels are just as fun as the actual boss levels.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think they serve an important gameplay function in that, like, Cuphead, as you have all probably heard, it is relentless. It is a very difficult game. And the run and gun levels, while they're not easy, a couple of them are, but they're mostly not easy.
It's kind of a reprieve.
He's not parrying on the pinks. What's he doing?
It's a palate cleanser. Yeah, who is playing this right
now?
He
needs to parry the pinks.
You need your three parries.
Well, it's definitely not Lily, who's the best Cuphead player in the office. I don't know. I feel like
he hasn't been hit yet, though. So there we go. Okay.
Yeah. I got the.
Yeah.
Anyway. Not everyone can see the video.
Yeah, sorry.
Video
exclusive.
You know, that's the problem with this game.
We have aphasia.
It's right in front of it. You can't not look at this game if it is in front of you. But
the gameplay is really good, too. Like, just, man, I love the challenge of going in, make sure you get all the coins, making sure you get all your parries, not getting hit, and getting that score. Like, for me, that was one of my favorite parts.
The frame counts are perfect.
Yeah.
Every mechanically, this game is basically flawless, which, for a first-time developer, is awesome. I mean, that's not to say that first-time developers aren't good at developing games. Plenty of them are, but for a first-time developer of 14 people from Studio MDHR to have made something that precisely perfect is to be commended. Mm-hmm. And they took home a whole bunch of trophies,
deservedly,
from the Game Awards.
Deserves
Game of the Year.
They won our Xbox Game of the Year Award as well, which we posted up last week if you happen to see them on IGN. What else did they – did they win anything else, Marty? You remember?
I think this actually posts – oh, yeah. Oh, wait. This is going up next week.
It's – we're live in the future. It's fine.
I believe it won the –
you're good. We're good. Don't worry about
won, it. We split up visuals into two categories, and it won, I think, Art Direction.
Okay, which is also what it won at the Game Awards.
Yeah, totally.
And as I said, Best Xbox One Game.
Best Xbox One Game.
Took the cake there.
Nominated for Game of the Year, but yeah, awesome game.
Yeah, I mean – and The compliment to how great of that game is how great that story is behind it and the development of it. And I urge anybody, if you haven't seen it yet, go watch Ryan's IGN Unfiltered interview with him. It's really, really interesting stuff. But talking to those guys over the last couple of years and like all the sacrifices that they made to do the game and all the, you know, indecision and first time developers, they didn't even know what they were doing. Like, this is just such a cool triumph.
Inspiring.
Yeah. Fantastic stuff. All the accolades. Very, very well earned by Studio MDHR. Just the hit of 2017.
Also,
for
best
Xbox.
Mobile game of 2017.
That's fake. Marty's referring to.
Well, it was real, but it's just not real.
It's
the app was real.
It's Cuphead a copyright
on iOS
infringement.
Was released this morning. Yeah. You could buy it for $5. It turns out that was not.
Don't
them.
Do that. It's already be gone by the time anybody sees or hears this. But
yeah. And then your bank information ends up somewhere.
Man, all right.
How is the Saudi prince going to get home?
Cuphead.
So, as I said, that PUBG and the huge launch there, providing some serious momentum, I think, along with the Xbox One X and the sort of phase out of the original Xbox One and it being replaced by the S and the X. Guys, Xbox is really heading into 2018 with some impressive momentum, I think, right?
Yeah. I'm excited for what next year brings.
Yeah, and we know, like, you know, Sea of Thieves has its March release date now. And
March 20th.
Yeah, it's possible State of Decay comes out before E3 as well. Yep, and possible. So
they had said spring, I believe.
Yeah, so we'll see if that sticks. I'm expecting Crackdown to be in the fall. Same thing with Ori.
You think so? You think it's going to be pushed back that far?
Yeah, I totally do.
I mean, but, I guess because – well, go ahead.
So I'm just saying that I think the exciting thing is at E3, clearly they're going to – they don't need to focus on new hardware,
right?
And you're gonna have a couple of these big first party games that they've been talking about the last couple of years out the door, and so I think it's really exciting to see what else, like what happens after, you know, we're getting 2018, but then what happens beyond that? Like, are we gonna get our tease of Halo 6
or
you know, are we gonna get, is it too soon to see that third person action game that Playground's working on?
You assume it's a Microsoft game.
I don't actually. I assume it's an everything game, but we'll see who's trying to get that on their stage.
That's a good point.
Seeing them on a PlayStation stage would be very strange.
That would be odd, but yeah, so we talked about Ori and the Will of the Wisps, which we are now clarifying, we are assuming, we know what assuming does.
Oh, no.
We are assuming it's going to be a 2018 game. Crackdown 3, State of Decay 2. Marty,
Sea
you, well, Sea of Thieves. You don't think Halo 6 will be 2018? The way you phrased that a minute ago?
If it was going to be 2018, they would have shown something of it by now. So it's totally
Destin
possible.
Tell him he's wrong.
Totally possible. The full reveal is at E3 with it coming out in fall.
Yeah.
So besides E3 in the summer, are there any events where they could potentially reveal this? X-O-18. I don't know.
Halo's big enough to create your own event.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, Microsoft should do more of. I think it should be tune in live to this thing next week on a Tuesday morning, like the way Rockstar does. Or the way
Bungie,
or the way Ubisoft's revealed, you know, stuff like Far Cry and everything, or how Call of Duty was revealed. Halo's absolutely one of those, you know, 10, 15 games that can merit its own event. Yeah.
I guess, Leo, let me take a quick informal survey. Does anyone else not think that Halo 6 will release in 2018?
Release.
Yeah.
Definitely announced. Release? I don't know, Ryan.
No?
Yeah.
Brandon?
I think reveal E3 release in late November.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be three years.
I mean, it kind of lines up close.
That's just how they do it, right?
Yeah. It kind of lines up with Phil Spencer saying, like, you know, we want short announcement cycles, which is contradictory to sort of Sony's approach, which is to show you this beautiful, awesome CGI trailer 2 years before the game comes out. And that hype,
at least,
sort of that hype wave rolls you into the launch. Microsoft hasn't had that same look. So I would love to see a super short announcement release cycle, especially because they're coming off not having that big first party killer game in a while.
So here's why I think Halo 6 will be out in 2018 in the fall. Number one, as you guys have touched on, history suggests it will.
Right.
It's the third year. It'll be 3 years since Halo 5. Mainline Halo games have been every 3 years since forever. That's number one. Number two, Phil's
statement.
Proclivity to, you know, his tendency to want to not show things super early, which, yeah, I know we didn't get a Cloaked Dude in the Desert teaser this year, but I don't think that necessarily means the game's not coming out. And honestly, quite frankly, I think they are going to wait until they have a killer, very close to finished demo to unveil this to the world with, because I really think there is a lot riding on Halo 6 for the Halo universe. Mm-hmm. Multiplayer is obviously on lock. It is one of the best shooters, one of the best multiplayer games in the world, and the support for it we've talked about a number of times. I don't think they get the recognition they deserve for how good their post-launch support has been.
Well, it's just assumed at this point, you know, like it's going to be good.
But Five story was so rough. We've talked about it ad nauseum. I think they've got to really have a demo that wows everybody whenever they decide to show it. Because I do think if the campaign in 6, the story in 6 has the problems that 5 had, then I really question like where they go in the future with, you know, and what sort of damage it could have on the Halo brand, even though, again, multiplayer is incredible. So I think it's going to be 2018, but it'll be a short, like, we're going to see it when it's almost done, whether that's E3 or at their own event a little before. And then we're going to have a big launch, and hopefully we're going to get a great single-player Halo again.
Do you think that they would take something out of the 360 playbook, tinfoil hat time, they do Marty's reveal thing, and they're like, by the way, Crackdown 3 pre-order people, you get into the multiplayer beta if you buy that game.
Totally.
It pushes Crackdown 3 pre-orders, it pushes Halo, gets everybody on board. I think that would be smart. Yeah. And then they do an open beta afterwards, but you get like 2 days early access if you get Crackdown, then everybody gets access. That'd be an awesome way to hype up Halo.
I don't think your hat's even tinfoil on that. I think it's just a regular baseball cap or whatever sort of headwear you prefer.
Strategy.
Just a normal
strategy headwear.
Maybe a
strategic headwear.
Yeah.
Maybe a newsboy hat.
Yeah, there you go.
Maybe a fedora. I'm not sure
it's not a fedora.
No fedoras. No,
it's a trilby.
Destin's not a. You don't think what kind of hat? What kind of hat should Destin? You never wear hats.
Don't look good in hats.
It was like one of those Robin Hood hats. I think would be.
I'll
nice.
Take it. Yeah,
it's angular.
I was doing archery this weekend.
Well, there you go. We lost my train of thought. Whatever.
Well, what else?
Next
so,
topic.
I do think we'll see Halo. I don't know. I'm sure we'll get games announced that, of course, aren't out. In 2018, I suspect maybe we'll get the Gears 5 trailer or teaser in 2018.
Gears Wars. I still want Gears Wars.
That strategy game, it lends itself perfectly. All the units are there. They're all there. It would be so good.
Yeah. And then I think we're going to get...
I want something new. I want something I haven't seen before yet.
Have Creative Assembly do it.
Yeah.
They know how to do it.
Yeah. I don't know if it's too early for... what is her name? Alan Wake and Quantum Break.
Oh,
Remedy. Whatever.
Your project
E7
you blank on one of your favorite
E7.
Devs?
Yeah, I don't know.
Why do you think of a lot of devs? Speaking extemporaneously here. There's no script.
Yeah, and then obviously, you know, we're going to get the reveal of a new Tomb Raider. Maybe that's going to be aligned with Xbox, although I think they probably learned that wasn't a great idea for Tomb Raider as a whole last time. Just I feel like if it launched everywhere, it probably would have had stronger push for Game of the Year nominations.
I voted for it.
Yeah.
I mean, Rise was a good game, though.
Rise was a phenomenal game.
Game of the Year vote for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so, yeah, I'm excited, and obviously, I don't know, we're going to have Microsoft alignment with some big Ubisoft games, I'm sure, next week, like they had with Assassin's Creed this year.
Splinter Cell!
Yeah!
Splinter Cell! Make it happen! Splinter Cell! Anyway, Forza Horizon 4 is a fair bet as well. So
what if they go off script?
A fair bet to, what if they do? That could be even better. What if they did that? I mean, topping 3 will be hard.
Sure.
If anybody can do it, Playground can do it. But if they wanted to veer off in another direction, take a fork in the road, driving game pun here.
Yeah. I know you're really driving
it
home.
Pull a U-turn.
Yeah.
What?
They wanted to steer the franchise in a different direction.
All right. Well,
well, it was 2017.
Do a three-point turn and go.
We should be getting a Playground-developed Forza game in 2018, and their track record is... almost perfect.
Right.
So, what?
Track record.
No, that's just stop it. Now it's not. Now you're just making it. Now you're just making a mountain out of a molehill.
Okay.
You're making a speed hump out of a speed bump.
There it is.
What?
I got you. We're just going in circles on this
one. There are those ones in neighborhoods which are like sort of gentler.
NASCAR.
That, you know, you can go a little faster. Thanks, Dustin. All right. So, there is the Xbox One. The Xbox One family in 2017. We look forward to 2018. We'll be talking much more, of course. Hopefully, we won't get any studio cancellations or game cancellations.
Ouch.
Or studio closures.
The first week we get back.
No, that's not going to happen. They should counter that by the first week of the year announcing a new studio and a new game.
Fable 4.
Bring balance to the
Fable 4. Also, just please don't cancel Crackdown the first week of the year.
No, don't cancel it.
I asked them, please do not do that.
I didn't even think they would do that. Oh, no.
So,
What if they're going to cancel it? Don't cancel it.
So, a great,
not that bad.
Great hardware year for Microsoft in 2017. 2018 should be a great software year. And there it is. So, Destin, thank you so much, as always.
Of course.
Where can we find you on the social medias, the wherevers?
Probably just on Twitter, at Destin Legarry. I do stream once in a while. The Destin channel, twitch.tv/Destin channel. So you can check me out there. playing a lot of PUBG. Still play Destiny 2.
Excellent. Brandon.
Same deal. I tweet sometimes.
Same stuff as his.
Yeah. Yep. You can find me on the Destin channel. No, I'm on Twitter, Brandon Tyrell, just my name. I tweet occasionally.
Three times.
Real endorse. I'm going to follow you right away with it's that fine. Ringing endorsement.
It's fine. I'm the hard to get Twitter account. I don't really care.
Marty.
At Ted Cruz.
Oh,
that's not accurate.
My father murdered Mark a bunch
Hamill.
Of people during
Mark
the 70s.
Hamill hates you.
Mark Hamill hates me. God, Mark Hamill's burn on him in the porn was
so good.
I also, God, I love the fact that these dudes and Ajit Pai, the same thing. These dudes grew up loving Star Wars and Luke Skywalker is just trashing them on Twitter.
Also,
love it.
Also, of every weekend to pick a fight with Mark Hamill.
That's great. I'm that Nick Biggity. Yeah, I retweet Mark Hamill now.
Just love it.
Oh, I'm man. Smart.
Yeah. You can find me on Twitter at @DMC_Ryan. I also host our monthly interview series, IGN Unfiltered, which Brandon was kind enough to plug earlier in the podcast. The December episode, who knows when you're seeing this, but the December episode is currently that's the new one, the current one. Mitch Gittleman, who was the studio head at FASA Studio back when that was one of Microsoft's premier studios in the Xbox 360 era. They did sort of most infamously the Shadowrun first-person shooter. We talk all about that. There's just a crazy story behind that, as well as Crimson Skies, High Road to Revenge, Mech Assault, and then some of the other stuff Mitch has worked on, which includes he's been sort of a co-pilot to Jordan Wiseman, the creator of Shadowrun, the creator of BattleTech for a long time. So his new studio, he's working on a new BattleTech game,
very cool,
which is looking sweet. Really good. So check that out on YouTube, IGN, or podcast services, and I hope you enjoy it. So happy New Year, everybody, and we'll see you back here with the brand new, regular, good old Unlocked shows in starting that first week of 2018. Bye.
Bye.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world. That ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.